Farsetti in the Morning.
Good morning and welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday. Mark Farzetta, Jamie Lynch, Pat Egan, Bob Cooney off this week. It's great to talk to you. Before we go down the negative alley, before we go there, let's say this. Flyers won. That was great. Awesome. Beat the Bruins. Took care of business. Carter Hart looked fantastic. And now this. Just before we talk about things that upset us, just take a second to recognize how great it actually feels to be upset with sports again. And that's what I was thinking about last night. Right before the news broke with Doug Peterson testing positive for coronavirus, I was thinking to myself, I am mad and upset at something that is non-COVID related. I am mad and upset at something that has nothing to do with coronavirus. I'm mad at over 20 turnovers by the 76ers. I'm mad by the Sixers blowing a game they should have won against the Pacers. I'm mad about Brett Brown and his rotations again. I'm mad about Raul Neto getting to play like a million minutes, including fourth quarter minutes in a close game. I am mad about all that and more. Happy about the Flyers. Yay. I'm happy about something non-pandemic related, like some other release of being able to go to a restaurant and sit outside and dine. Oh, look what I can do again. This is great. No, I was happy about the Flyers and watching them take care of what they needed to take care of. And I even love what the Flyers tweeted out after the game saying, the Capitals want none of this smoke, who they face in a couple of days now. Loved Carter Hart in net, everything. But then on the other side of it, I really did miss being upset by something. And this is something that we talked about over the last couple of weeks. And when I was interviewing some fans a couple of weeks ago as well, one of the things they missed was actually being upset that Ben Simmons wasn't shooting and missing having those arguments with their own friends about Ben Simmons not shooting or about Brett Brown's rotation or about Shake Milton being put in the starting five. So we have so much to get into today, including that Phillies team. They're going to play today. Hopefully. Never know what could happen in the world of baseball, unfortunately, but we'll see what happens today with the Phils. But last night, for the last story will be the first story today. The story that broke last night by our own Tim McManus, who will join us at 8 o'clock today to give us all the latest on Doug Peterson and more. Tim McManus tweeted this out last night, filed to ESPN. Eagles coach Doug Peterson tests positive for coronavirus, according to sources. He relayed the news to the team tonight. That's last night, obviously, after a second positive test confirming the news. Then later on, Tim McManus followed up that tweet by putting out, no current plans to shut down the NovaCare facility. Doug Peterson will continue to lead the team virtually. He and a staffer that was later reported to be Press Taylor, Eagles quarterback coach and passing game coordinator, who was also sent home as well. Deuce Daly will run the day-to-day operations with the team. Doug Peterson also did point out that it is early August. It's not the middle of September. It's not during the season. So he's got time to actually respond to all this and make sure that he has all his ducks in a row. The most positive part about that whole thing is that Doug tested positive and supposedly contracted it away from the NovaCare complex. The negative is that he has been to the NovaCare complex in an area that he has deemed as recent as last week. Very safe, no issues whatsoever. It still worries me that he was there around the rest of the team. It's good that they're doing the virtual meetings even last week when everyone was showing up. And it really does give me a little bit of comfort that he at least was away from the team and he's asymptomatic at least. This is something that I know a lot of people jump to the conclusion of, just cancel the season. I'm with you as far as this is extremely dangerous. This is something that we don't want to break out again in South Philadelphia, right, with this team, because we all want a football season. I just don't see, and my confidence was wavering on this season anyway, the head coach of the football team has just tested positive. And he was around other players. I don't know how the hell they start and finish the season. I know they are going to start the NFL season. I don't see how they finish the NFL season. That's my big concern.
Two words in that statement like kind of jumped out in neon to me. No plans to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
No plans.
Yeah, nothing. No, not going to do it.
So are they Major League Baseball where we're learning the protocol on the fly?
No, when they say they're not shutting down, what I think of is the fact that it's not the beginning of the season yet. They don't have to shut down right now. They could just do less.
No, they don't. But it made me wonder, like, how airtight is this protocol? Is each team on their own to make their own decisions here? Or, like, is there a mandated league Like,
no, the league had to approve their protocol.
Okay, so it is each team's protocol.
Team. Yeah.
Doug Peterson, I would imagine the head coach in that building is around more people than most.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm shocked it's only one guy. Maybe they're right that everything is virtual at this point, so it doesn't matter, but yikes. I mean, if there's one person you don't want getting it right off the bat, it's the head coach, because he's seen all the position coaches who then therefore see the players, and it's like trickle down times 100.
Well, the other thing I don't know is how virtual the coaches' meetings have been. I know players' meetings will still be virtual just to avoid that time where everyone's around each other
a
bit further, other than, you know, weight room activities and all that. So when I look, and they showed the pictures of the guys working out at the NovaCare complex with the masks on and all that. So they are trying to do whatever they can to cut down on players being around each other to put them at risk.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does bother you.
I still find it weird it's up to each team.
Well, one of the things the NFL has done, and I applaud them in a way for this, is they have left it up to the local governments of each city.
Yeah.
So, and you kind of,
but everybody's bad.
Oh,
New Jersey got an uptick.
Right.
Pennsylvania's having a small uptick.
Oh, no. What is it? Upper Darby is having a big issue right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, yeah.
Hotspot?
So it's like, yeah, you can leave, but everybody's bad.
Uh-huh.
So, okay. I mean, I guess I'll trust you to run your league efficiently. But you would think after watching Major League Baseball bungle this for 2 weeks, you might want to make sure everything's airtight. Like, I'm not sure if every team should have that freedom right now.
Well, I'll say this. It's not like they tested positive and then all of a sudden they got everyone together, including the people that were testing positive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's one thing that's
I mean, it's good. He's not in the building.
Yeah.
Now.
I get it. But this is supposed to be that bubble, and he had infiltrated the bubble.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, after this news, and he's now the second coach, the first coach within the season, I guess, within everyone together. Sean Payton obviously tested positive months ago. Doug Peterson's the first coach.
And he's asymptomatic.
Yeah, first coach since the, again, I don't want to say restart, but since training camp opened, to test positive for coronavirus. So I know a lot of people's confidence, like mine, was already on the fence. Like, I don't really see how they get this done. Well, they might, because there's a lot of money behind it. I don't know, man. It doesn't look positive at all.
They're certainly going to try everything under the sun. You know, the NFL already planned for it with the first 4 weeks of scheduling for the season. I think they're planning on canceling games. But I to bring it back to the Phillies, I really think the Phillies case is going to be a positive for these leagues pushing forward. The fact that no Phillies got it, and now look, football's an entirely different animal because they're, you know, hitting each other at full force and there's droplets everywhere. Close proximity, but the fact that the Phillies didn't get it, I think, is a positive for a lot of these leagues looking at it, mainly just NFL and MLB. I think MLB, after no Phillies came back, you know, positive, went, all right, yeah, we're going to finish this year now.
Mm.
Like, we can do whatever we need to do to get it done. And the NFL's watching closely on how they do this, and it's going to be tough. It's really going to be tough to finish an NFL season.
I think, if anything, there's a sigh of relief from the Phillies, but I don't think any other league can look at them as the great rule here. And I think they're going to be the exception.
No, it's just one of it. Mentally, you go, all right, well, there was no transmission team to team there. You know, they were inside, same facilities, more or less. Mm-hmm. All right, we can do this. That's good. It contained within one team. It didn't spread massively.
I think the biggest learning lesson here is what needs to happen if somebody does test positive that you are on the field against. Like,
yeah,
that's one of the main things that they're going to take away from this Phillies and Marlins series that shut it down for over a week, is that, yeah, you could be on the field and you cannot test positive. However, we need to handle these situations in a better way.
Yeah, if you're the New York Giants coming in, like, I don't even know who week one is. That's how little I've paid attention to the schedule. But let's say it's a division opponent.
Washington, isn't it?
It might be. Washington football team.
Yes, of course.
I've seen their merchandise online. It's ridiculous. But if they're coming in and Doug Peterson gets it, you know, the Wednesday before, do you want to come in and play that game?
Not really.
Yeah.
But again, that's what he's saying, is that, like, they have time right now for someone to test positive. Shut them down for a little bit.
Sure, but somebody else is going to catch it in season.
Oh, definitely.
Like, there's going to be another head coach, and what does that other team... What's their saying this?
The only thing that I think delays or suspend, you know, delays the season, the only thing that delays the NFL season is if there is an outbreak right before week one.
Yeah.
That is the only thing that the NFL will go, well, yeah, this is a bad idea. We're going to push it back to week four, like you mentioned, with the schedule the way it's lined up. And we're going to make sure that everyone can get things started then. That's how they're going to try to get through this.
Sheesh.
And it does just make you more concerned because it's the same reason that the Phillies made you concerned, or that the Marlins made you concerned, I should say, because they literally didn't even have the first week of the season. They had the first series of the season, and two teams had to shut down, essentially, and four other teams were affected schedule-wise. Yeah. So when you look at that happening that early, and then you look at this happening with Doug Peterson this early, and you think about the guys he was around on the team, you think to yourself, and you already had one assistant, Press Taylor, a passing game coordinator.
Yeah.
Essentially, he's the offensive coordinator, de facto title, whatever, even though that's really Doug, we know the reason. But when you really look at it, it happened this early. Well, you weren't even a week in camp.
So if that happens in season, does Deuce Staley just get the call up?
I guess that's how it works. That's how it's working right now.
So Carson Wentz catches COVID, Jalen Hurts is your starter, and so on and so on. We're just going to plow through the season like this?
As of right now, yes.
Because that's what baseball's doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, there was, what, eight games that were affected over the weekend where there just wasn't action? Mm-hmm. I was, you know, it's stupid. Nobody cares about fantasy sports. When I'm looking at my fantasy baseball team, it's like, out for COVID, team not playing because of COVID outbreak, team not playing. But and literally, I had about seven or eight guys on my fantasy baseball team out for COVID reasons. And I was like, what's the NFL schedule going to look like?
It's right. But as long as, again, as long as there's not a major outbreak right before the season starts, yeah, full speed ahead.
What's considered major to you? Because in baseball, four of whatever was considered a major outbreak.
I would say in football, it's probably going to be like, oh, wow, we have 5-10 guys that are going to be testing positive before the game. Okay, see you later.
Like that, I'd love to see what their protocol is because there's definitely a percentage of the roster or staff or whatever that's their threshold of, all right, we can't go past this.
Mm-hmm.
Like if there's 11 guys on the 53-man roster that have it, phew.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I mean, it's a new situation every day.
Look, let me just say this. I don't think that this should all be starting. I don't, like, baseball, no. Football, absolutely not. If you're in a bubble, more power to you for doing everything you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You can't do that with baseball, at least not, I guess you can't because it was
MLBPA
expensive.
Voted it down.
Right, but also, it would be pretty damn expensive to do it properly.
Yeah,
that's the other
you'd
thing.
Have to take over Scottsdale in Florida and make your own town.
In all honesty, I think you would need more than that for baseball. And you'd certainly need more than that for football. Like, you would literally need to have, like, your own state. Basically.
Football, I don't see how they do a bubble system.
Yeah, not literally, obviously. But, yeah, you would obviously have to have a lot of issues or a lot of cities ironed out there to be your own bubbles. Maybe each division would have to have your own bubble in football.
Yeah.
And you look at it in baseball, similar scenario as well. So, basketball and hockey, more power to you. And aside from the Flyers giving you good vibes with the victory.
So nice this weekend.
It was great. I mean, and the Flyers really did feel like a saving grace of the weekend, especially with the way they played yesterday against the Bruins. And then the night end. Like, here's how my night was going to end last night. I was going to rewatch this. I watched the Flyers. I'm feeling good. I had a nice dinner, right? And then I literally hit play to restart, to rewatch the Sixers game, right? And then
I caught some of the replay in Sunday morning.
Yeah.
That's how I started my day.
Yeah.
Just a little waterboarding to myself.
And then I get the news from our own Tim McManus, who'll join us at 8 o'clock about Doug. So we'll continue the conversation about Doug Peterson as the show goes
on. Don't kick its ass.
What's that? Oh, Doug? Yeah.
Yeah, Corona.
Yeah, he'll call a little Philly.
Get out of here. Yeah. Fourth and one. I'm going for it.
So we'll talk about Doug Peterson. And then, yes, we will get into the Sixers because on Friday, during our New Year's party, we did have to address a little bit more of reality. And the reality there was, if this doesn't work with Shake Milton, which is a drastic change, putting a guy in your starting five and removing your all-star point guard from the point guard position, moving him to power forward, that's a drastic change. And Shake was supposed to be a guy that calmed the storm.
Yeah, we might have jumped the gun a little bit.
With what?
Our excitement.
I mean, I was excited for the restart more than I was excited for anything.
I think a lot of people, because of how well Shake played prior to the break, set unfair expectations for Shake.
Just to be clear.
And I might be guilty of that.
He played good in one game, right?
He's had a couple of good games.
Yeah, he played great in one game.
He played great in one game.
I wasn't even going with that because we weren't going to get that Shake Milton with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons on the floor.
Yeah, and we with how well he played, I think we overlooked that he's a second-year player with very minimal experience that just a summer ago, had trouble kind of leading the summer league squad.
Yeah, and he's a second round pick too. It's not like he's some like
54th overall or 60th.
Like, here's the deal. I just wanted to see him be a guy to come in and just be a good point guard. That's it. Set up other players. Shake Milton looked like he was way in over his head.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're the head coach of this basketball team, if you're Brett Brown, you can't have your drastic decision look like he is in over his head in his first experience. Now, some might say, oh, well, it was only 19 minutes. You know, this is only his first game as a starter with this. He's gonna be working out the kinks. Yeah, that can't happen when you're only playing 8 games to ramp up for better seeding for the playoffs. That can't happen. And you can't look that uncomfortable on the floor. 19 minutes, 3 turnovers, what, 5 personal fouls? You can't have that kind of problem. And then to look at Howell Neto as a guy that was the better replacement there, like at least give me a little bit more Alec Burks, maybe.
I think I just got chills when you said Neto.
But that was the thing. Howell Neto came in and did what I was expecting Shake Milton to do, which was just be a decent point guard, set up other guys, calm the storm a little bit, slow the pacing of the game. That was something that was just way, way, way disappointing to see Shake Milton that out of sorts. And here's the thing. I don't think it's a huge storyline that him and Joel Embiid were jawing at each other. But when you really watch that, there's no positive you could take out of that. Oh, yeah, we move on. Oh, you know, it's not a big deal. Yeah, I get that it's probably not a huge deal with this team. But that's an awful look for the first game back after a storyline of the shutdown has been how much better their chemistry has been in the bubble. Oh, yeah, everyone's great. Oh, we love each other. Yeah, you can feel like you're on the same page as the teammate and feel like you could get away with yelling at him because you know it's coming from a good place, whatever.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid was flat out pissed off because Shake Milton wasn't bringing his A game in his best career opportunity.
I had somebody tweet me that they Zapruder'd the lip reading.
Well.
And it's, you know. Look, it's not a huge deal. I'm sure they are friendly. Mm. I mean, who doesn't like Joel Embiid on that court? But when you say, I actually had a little problem with what Embiid did.
What?
I'm probably in the minority. He had every right to be frustrated with Shake and the way he was playing. He showed him up on the court. If you have a problem with your teammate, you take it to the sideline, and it continued there. But he showed him up on the court.
What did he do on the court?
It was the pick and roll situation where it led to a bucket before it.
Uh-huh.
And he was kind of throwing his hands up and acting a little churlish.
Okay.
And then he had the inbound pass and he gunned it at his head.
Uh-huh.
And that's where Shake turned around, was like, started talking back to him. And that's where TJ came in, stole the ball, hit TJ Warren for the open three. Embiid brought a little, like, while I like the message he's trying to send, mm-hmm. He kind of affected two plays by doing it on the court.
Yeah, I don't know.
If I'm Shake, look, I might snap back too there. You know what I mean? Like, he kind of showed him up on the court a little bit.
To me, Shake,
wait till the timeout, wait till the stop in possession, ream his ass out.
Well, it looked like that's what he was trying to do.
It's coming from a good place, but he did it on the court. But he took it
to the sideline with him, too, though.
I know.
And that's where they had their words exchanged, and that's where Shake started going off. Shake was like a quarterback letting his guy go over the middle, and Embiid had his legs taken out. If I'm Embiid, I'm doing the same thing.
I thought they both... Shake sucked Saturday. There's no way around that. Embiid was a little divish on the court, in my opinion. I'm probably going to be in an extreme minority here.
I would say.
I just didn't like the way he handled it on the court.
I think it's
coming from. I don't like the way he executed it.
I think Shake is the guy that's trying to earn his stripes in the
Oh, absolutely. The Joel Embiid had a phenomenal game. Oh, he's an MVP. Like, they're not even comparable.
Mm-hmm.
He just relax on the in-court stuff.
Little kid glove him a little bit?
It's not even about that. It's just you affected two plays by removing yourself from it. Like, mm-hmm. if you go back and watch it, the pick and roll he gets upset with Shake about, he more or less gives up on the play, Joel,
mm-hmm.
because he was so frustrated by Shake.
Uh-huh.
Then he gets the inbound and chucks it at his head
uh-huh.
pretty hard at a close distance. Now, that's affected Shake so that he looks back at Joel like, what the hell, man? And then he gets the ball stolen and it leads to another three. So while Joel is right, it directly led to 5 points because of his immaturity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a small deal, and it's not it bothered me.
Okay. I mean, I saw him whip the pass at him. I didn't take it as, like, aggression.
He gave up on the pick and roll on the play before it.
Uh-huh. And we've seen Joel do that before. I remember
because
Joel was even starting, that was an issue with
him. It was almost because Shake had done something wrong. He was just like, oh, this play's over.
Mm-hmm.
And he was more concerned with getting the message to Shake instead of maybe saving a play. I don't know. It just sat wrong with me.
See, again, that to me goes back to the head coach.
Sure.
Because you're putting that guy in a position where he's way in. I mean, the thought that came
to my mind toasted.
Was way in over his head.
Oh, yeah. He was drowning.
And if you're one of the players out there, if you're a guy like Ben Simmons, or you're a guy like Joel Embiid, and this guy's not going to be able to keep up with you, and you're trying to win a championship, and you're like, wait a minute, hold on, this guy's the answer?
Oh,
it
no.
It also shows you what you could get away with.
I fully understand why Joel Embiid is pissed.
All right, so we got plenty to break down about that Shake Milton fella and how all that worked out. Because TJ Warren turns out to be pretty good at basketball. Rich Hoffman will join us at 9 o'clock today from The Athletic. Rich had some interesting stuff here. Because he had the numbers with Ben Simmons on TJ Warren.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You would want them to be good because Ben's, in my opinion, generally speaking, a pretty elite defender.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case. Not the case on Saturday, unfortunately. Then we're also going to get into a little bit more of Shake Milton versus Joel Embiid. We'll also get into the bright idea that Brett Brown had with Shake Milton going into the starting lineup, only to be taken out of the starting lineup. Like, he didn't start the second half. And he certainly didn't play a lot of the fourth quarter either. Some of that was because of foul trouble. Other reason was Howell Neto, for whatever reason, had more respect than he did on the court with the rest of the guys. Talk about that. We also have the Philadelphia Flyers to get into a little bit more. Phillies are back in action today. And how concerned are you now with Doug Peterson testing positive for coronavirus about this football season? Because even talking about this last week, people had over the top, not even over the top, but people had lots of concerns about the NFL season even starting on time. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. We got Mike and Delran, open lines after that. We come back, we'll hear from Doug Peterson and what he said last week going into the season about the safety and the sanctity of the bubble itself for the Eagles. Time of the Fanatic, 621.
Farzetta in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
On the line with us right now from the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast, Tim McManus. Hey, Tim.
Sorry to send you deeper into the pit of despair there, Mark.
No,
not my goal.
And I know because, you know what, you're a great reporter and you're doing your job. You're doing yeoman's work, my friend.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So this story comes up. You put it out there. What was your first thought? What was your first concern? Was it trying to put pieces together, and obviously you found out later it was probably Press Taylor being sent home. What was your first reaction when you were alerted of this news?
That it's big news. I mean, that's the first thing that hit me is that sort of the gravity of it. You know, it's Doug Peterson is the head of an organization that so many people love in this town and beyond, and they're trying to get up and running and having a football season, and Peterson was the one who on a video conference just a few days ago it told us, you know, I feel extremely safe. And he was the one that contracted the coronavirus. So a lot of things go through your mind. All right, who's going to take up the operations? You know, how is Peterson? Obviously, is number one. Like, is he okay? You know, so there's a lot of things that run through your mind. But one is kind of the seriousness of it, both for the coach and then what it means for the organization.
Yeah, and Press Taylor, just for the record to be clear, has not tested positive. He was just around Doug Peterson, correct?
That's right. And so my understanding is that there was one staffer, and it was Press Taylor, who was sent home after Peterson got news of the positive test. And so far, Press Taylor has tested negative, and he's just going through the protocol. So at least that's where it stands for right now. We've seen people, including, it seems, Peterson, who are negative, and then end up getting a positive. So we can't say that it's, you know, that story is totally done. But as of right now, Press Taylor, asymptomatic, hasn't tested positive.
So right now, are there two people concrete, two people that have tested positive, Lane Johnson and Doug Peterson?
Those are the ones that are public and the ones that I've had confirmed. I mean, it doesn't mean that there aren't others,
right,
but those are the ones that we know about.
Tim, you know, you doing your job virtually this year, or at least for right now, is obviously different than previous years. Is there any indication of what percentage of time at the NovaCare Complex is virtual compared to like team gatherings? Like, how many people do you think Doug Peterson is seeing and interacting with on a daily basis down there? Because I would imagine their new norm is out the window, or their new norm is you know, completely different. Like, how much interaction is going on down there at the NovaCare Complex, and when do you think things are going to get back to a normal-ish football sense?
Sure, it's a great question, and the ramp-up period for this past week, I would say, was probably limited in terms of a lot of people gathering together. I mean, we saw Carson Wentz and the rest of the guys coming in, getting tested. You had to have 3 negative tests to get into the building. And then they were, and from there, there wasn't much football activity going on. It was just very basic stuff, not a lot of time spent, not a lot of gatherings. But really, starting today, they enter kind of a different phase. It's now through August 11th where they're doing more conditioning work together, where you are allowed to have walkthroughs together. And then from there, it starts building up even further. And so one thing that has been a constant that you hear doctors say, and just people in the business, and just common sense, is, you know, this isn't a sport where you can have social distancing. I mean, I had the NFLPA head doc tell me that this is a perfect petri dish for spread of the coronavirus football. And you know, just common sense tells you that. I mean, because you have so many people so closely together so often. And so now they're hitting this kind of phase where you're going to be seeing more of that, and it comes on the heels of a positive test by the head coach.
And real quick, on the heels of that, Tim, I know there had been some whispers or rumors about potentially splitting up the team, maybe doing an offense at the Link and the defense at the NovaCare, or inverted, however you want. Is there any talks of that still? Is that a possibility? Like, how are they going to spread this out? Separate locker rooms, like all that stuff. Do you have any word of that?
So the intention was not to have the team split up. In fact, you know, the NFL and the NFLPA bargained for you could either have a 90-man roster, in which case you had to split it, or you could have an 80-man roster and you didn't have to split. And the Eagles have gone with the latter. They've chosen to have an 80-man roster, and the intention wasn't to have the team split, but maybe meetings spread out. And that's where they would use Lincoln Financial Field as to hold meetings, where they had more space, so they didn't have to have as many people. Now, all this is fluid, so that may change. But what they've done is they've used, like, there's a break room, right, like a game room that extends off of the locker room, that they've put locker stalls in, and they've found ways like that to try to have people as distant as possible. But as of last I heard, there were no plans to have split practices.
We have Tim McManus on the line with us right now, Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. Tim, looking at the protocol throughout the NFL, is it pretty much up to every team, or does the NFL just have a blanket way to run protocol with COVID?
I mean, some things are standard. I mean, like mask wearing indoors, the way that facilities are structured, they at least have to pass a certain standard that is being reviewed, you know, by the NFL and NFLPA in order for you to get the green light. The Eagles have passed that. Mm-hmm. So some things in terms of actual protocols are written into, to these lists of things, the way that teams have to function. And then the way that you go about it at times is unique to your facility, about right, what it looks like and how much room you have, things like that. So that's where it becomes team to team, but there also is kind of a set list of things that you need to do.
When you talk about Doug Peterson saying that he tested positive, contracted the virus away from the NovaCare Complex, is there any more information as to how he might have contracted it?
I don't have that yet, but it is the belief that he contracted that outside of the building. And it was earlier last week, from my understanding, and then presumably there were negative tests that followed that. He returned to work, and then a positive test came, and then a second positive test came, and they waited until, you know, the second positive test where it was sure, because there's false positives out there.
Right.
So once he got confirmation, he called a virtual team meeting at 8:30 last night and let the team know. So, you know, it looked like there could have been some negative tests that, you know, where he got back in the building and then he tested positive. And honestly, that's one of the big major concerns about this whole deal, is that you can walk into business or your school or wherever not knowing that you've had it, or maybe even having tested negative, and then you turn out to be a spreader. And, right, you know, and Peterson is the one that's the head of all this and certainly is taking precautions and it has it top of mind. And then, so if it can happen to Peterson, it can happen to anybody.
Speak with Tim McManus. So if you're looking at it like this, if you're trying to be optimistic, is there an optimistic viewpoint of, you know what, these guys are just getting back. They were just getting back from living their lives. This can only get better simply because they're now back at work and the Eagles have more control over them? Or is this something that will only get worse? Like, what does your gut tell you right now?
I mean, I would like to be optimistic, but I think being realistic, it's the people are still going from work back home. This is not the NBA. You know, they're not in a bubble. And there are coaches and there are players who are making the decision not to be with their families, that they're going to be stay in a hotel and they're going to isolate. And to your point there, like, there'll be some people who will be super diligent. But there's others who, even if they are being diligent, they're still going to be exposed to other people. And so it just seems like, is the spigot all of a sudden going to turn off and this is not going to happen? I mean, that seems unrealistic. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I know that people are going to be trying their best, but, you know, Peterson was trying his best.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just can't help it, especially because of the asymptomatic nature of it in some cases. So I would like to give a positive spin here, but I think it's going to be a massive undertaking for the NFL to get this up and running, simply because there's so many people. It's so close contact. There's an asymptomatic nature of the spread in some cases, and there's no bubble.
Tim, last one from me. Let's assume, fairly or unfairly, that Doug isn't going to be the last guy to catch this as a major name in this league. Let's say there's another coach that catches it, you know, the Thursday before week one in the opening week. Do you think they play those games? Does the assistant coach step up and the head coach has to quarantine himself? And do you see the opposition coming into that team's, you know, home field facilities having a problem if there's been a minor outbreak on the opposition?
I mean, it's a great question. I don't have the answer to yet. And
is that question really answered by the league, I guess?
I don't think that they have that necessarily all, you know, it might just be kind of circumstance by circumstance. But as we saw with the Marlins series, it's like, well, maybe you should have shut down earlier. Maybe there's lessons that can be learned from that. But it speaks to a larger question of where's the threshold?
Yeah.
Right? What are you willing to accept? How much spread is too much spread? And when it comes to coaches in particular, guys, I mean, they're in a higher risk category.
Sure.
Where a lot of players, I mean, most of them statistics say are going to end up being fine. But you have coaches across the league, the average age for a head coach in the NFL is 50, so Peterson's just a notch above that. You know, some are on the younger side, some are in their 30s, they're healthy. We also have coaches that are in their late 60s. You have coaches that are cancer survivors. I mean, what happens if Bruce Arians gets it?
Yeah.
What happens if Chuck Pagano gets it? Right? These are the kind of questions that you really have to grapple with the start of the football season, because, you know, Lord willing, Peterson is going to be fine and you can move on. But what if a coach ends up not being fine? I mean, where is the threshold for this? And this is obviously a very much new thing that everybody is dealing with and trying to do their best. But these are questions that need to be answered before you get in the thick of it, because it can go the wrong way on it.
Tim, just last thing here. How often are these guys doing the virtual meetings? What are they doing on the field, the weight room, training facility? Like, how often are they in virtual meetings?
Yeah, so most of it to this point has been virtual, and they are going to keep a component of that throughout the course of the season. I mean, they're going to do as much as they can. Like, you're in the building for as long as you have to be, and then leave, and we'll have our meetings after the fact from our own homes in a safer setting. So that's kind of the mindset, certainly of the Eagles, and I think league wide. But they're going into a part now where they're getting into the building and they're starting to do conditioning. You're not allowed to do conditioning tests yet, but there's this window of August 3rd to August 11th where you start to ramp up the conditioning process. So guys are going to be in there and they're going to be doing work. And then there's, you know, you can have an hour walkthrough per day. So you're starting to get into the place where it's looking close. We're not at football yet, but it's starting to look closer to football. And there's no avoiding that. I mean, they're going to have to ramp up if they want to have a season. And really today is the first day that we're starting to get a look at that. So they're going to be sprinkling more on-field work and conditioning work in with as much virtual as they can do.
Tim, I really appreciate you coming on. Great work on you getting the story. And, yeah, thanks for coming on this morning, man. We hope to talk to you again about football and not a virus in the not-too-future future.
I know, man. I know. I know. It's such a – I can't wait to get back to normalcy, and hopefully it comes really soon. Come on, scientists, right?
Yeah. Hey, you know what? That's the team we're all rooting for right now.
Yes, sir.
I look forward to having you on, hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, Tim, where I can just say, hey, what do you think about the Eagles?
And what about Jason Peters playing right guard?
Yeah,
can we talk about that?
It has nothing to do with, football, unfortunately. Yeah.
I love that idea, man. I can't wait, guys.
Yeah. Tim, thanks so much, brother. Appreciate it, man.
See you, Tim.
Tim McManus, our own Tim McManus, ESPN reporter for the Eagles, right here on 97.5, the Fanatic, joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast.
Farzetta in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Let's get to Jordan Hall here, NBC Sports Philadelphia, joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. Jordan, how you doing, buddy?
Mark, doing well. How are you?
I am doing awesome because you know what? The team that you cover is doing phenomenally well. They're 1-0, and that's all I really care about right now, thank goodness. Now, they were shut down for 4 months, so we all know the story there. They came out after one ramp-up game and looked like that against the Bruins? This team's only going to get better.
If you're Flyers fans, I'm not sure you could ask for a better start. You play the best team in the league, and you pretty much run them off the ice. And now you're looking like you can really climb in this round robin. You have the potential to grab the number one seed. You can't go any lower than what you're currently at it for. Flyers fans should be excited. I don't think anyone should be throwing cold water on their excitement.
Absolutely not. And really, a lot of it goes to, like, we just like watching teams that are always held accountable, and that's the word we keep going back to when we talk about Alain Vigneault. But these players look like they were putting in work in the offseason to make sure they were staying in top shape. Other than maybe the first 10 minutes of the game against the Penguins and the warm-up thing, the preseason game, if you will, they look like they are just in top physical condition. Are you seeing that from them as well?
100%. And that goes back to training camp before the season. Alain Vigneault really put an emphasis on conditioning because his system is all about hard on the attack, forechecking, constant north-south type of play. And in order to play that style, you have to be conditioned because if you're not and you're constantly trying to get after the opposition and wear them down, you might wear yourself down. But they really don't wear themselves down because Alain Vigneault put an emphasis on conditioning during training camp before the season. He pushed them really hard in this two-week camp. At the end of practices, they would do about 10 minutes of conditioning, and that's on top of after a really strenuous practice. He has them ready to go. They're in shape, and they've responded to him. He's a veteran coach who's kind of been there, done that, and they respect his presence, and I think you're seeing both sides get the best of one another.
Jordan, Jamie Lynch here. Obviously, this little round-robin kind of top four seeding tournament is important, but at the same time, at the end of things, with no home ice advantage, maybe not. So it's a good time to kind of tinker around with some lineups. Ghost wasn't playing yesterday, but I would expect at some point in these next couple games, he does get some run in. How much tinkering around do you think Elaine is going to do with the lines while they're in this round-robin, or do you think it's fairly set?
Yeah, it's a tricky spot because, like you said, Jamie, they're trying to improve their seed to number one, but really their sole focus is game one of the first round, which will start August 11th. But I do think they're going to try some things. And I think it might make it a little easier for them now. Michael Roffel left in the third period with an undisclosed issue. It looked like it was like a leg injury. We're not sure of his status, but now they have some time on their side, and if they want to, maybe they, you know, say Raffel's issue is a little serious, but it's not too bad. Then they can maybe sit Raffel these final two round robin games. They can play Joel Farabee, tell Raffel, hey, rest up, be ready for round one. And then same will go for anyone else. But at the same time, you win game one of the round robin, you have a chance to win really a huge decisive game two, because if you win that, all of a sudden you're in the driver's seat to possibly grab that number one seed. So, but they will try things. I expect Ryan Elliott probably to play game two against the Capitals. Like you said, I think Shane Gostisbehere will absolutely get a game in this round robin. I expect Joel Farabee to see the ice. So yeah, they're going to try some things, and their main focus is that game one of the first round, and they trust their reinforcements. They like their depth, so they have no problem utilizing it during this time.
Now, we're all excited, Jordan. Speak with Jordan Hall, NBC Sports Philadelphia. If you had to nitpick, if you really had to nitpick on something, what's something you wanted to see but didn't see, or something you need to see more of?
That's a good question.
I know it's hard because they played awesome. Damn it.
Right. I really was. I was looking for things to kind of critique and say, okay, well, you know, I like this team, but they probably could have done that. But last night really was almost a complete performance. They didn't start extremely well. I thought Nate Thompson, one of their depth guys, I know he scored their second goal, and he's a really good guy to have, 35-year-old veteran who's been to an Eastern Conference final. He's played in a Western Conference final. He's a good guy to have for depth. I didn't think he had the best start to the game, and I thought that was kind of signaled Joel Farabee's arrival. But then he scores a goal and looks better the rest of the way. If anything, I think it's sometimes the starts. Carter Hart really keeps them in games and allows them to kind of get their legs underneath them. And through the year, they had some games where, you know, they didn't really let up the score sheet early on in games. And then they came on in the second period. So maybe, if anything, a start. Especially when you're playing some of these best teams, a team like the Lightning that can really jump on you offensively. The Capitals obviously can score a lot of goals. If anything, I would say their starts can be better. But so far, there hasn't been a lot to dislike with the exhibition game and this first-round robin game.
Jordan, is there a noticeable difference amongst some of the vets that have been on this team this year compared to years past under Vigneault? Like, does Claude Giroux and Couturier, do they sense that they have more help around them now? Is there a sense of ease under Vigneault? Have they changed from your perspective?
Absolutely. Like, to me, I see a much loosened up Claude Giroux. I see Sean Couturier with less pressure. I see Jacob Voracek having more fun. Because in years past, they really did have a lot on their shoulders. If they weren't producing, the team really wasn't. And if you look at their past two playoff appearances, they got worked pretty well by the Capitals and Penguins, teams that not only had star power, but they had depth. And I think that wore on the players like Claude Giroux. Claude Giroux hasn't really been a productive player the last two playoff series. That's just a fact. But a lot of that was because there was so much on his shoulders. This team's so much deeper now. And I think they realized that. They've said that. Claude Giroux the other day said this was one of the deeper teams he's been on. Jacob Voracek said in February that he's like, let's be honest, if in years past, if myself, Sean Couturier, or Claude Giroux didn't score, we were probably losing games. Instead, we're winning by about three or four goals now when that happens. Look at the exhibition against the Bruins. Jacob Voracek, Claude Giroux, Sean Couturier, they combined for one assist, and they beat the best team in the league by three goals. That doesn't mean they didn't play well. They had a really tough assignment against that Bruins line, and they really actually outplayed them. But I think that spoke volumes that they won by three goals, that trio putting up one assist.
Yeah, that's not happening in the past, that's for sure.
Jordan, speaking of Jordan Hall, NBC Sports Philly. Jordan, the other thing is, obviously, we look at the Sixers right now. We're very reactionary about the Sixers. Very reactionary on the other end of the spectrum when it comes to the Flyers in terms of positivity right now. How excited should Flyers fans be right now? We know that, especially that shutdown, they're the best team in hockey. They look like they picked up right from where they left off. How excited should Flyers fans be about this team being for real?
They should absolutely be excited. I know the Eastern Conference is deep, and that's the one concern for me, that they could possibly see a team like the Lightning or Bruins in the second round, and then obviously they would probably have to see one of those teams in the Eastern Conference final. So that would be my one concern. But there's a ton of reason for excitement, especially for a fan base that's been really, really patient. If you look at the past seven seasons, there's been three playoff bursts and no series victories. And there's been a lot of stagnancy with the team and the organization. This is a new group. Chuck Fletcher, the general manager, is from outside the organization. Alain Vigneault is from outside the organization. Heck, he came from a division rival. I don't think the Flyers would have done that in the past where they brought guys in from outside the organization as much and guys that came from division rivals. Even their assistants. Mike Yeo has won a Stanley Cup with the Pittsburgh Penguins as an assistant. Michelle Therrien was a head coach at the Penguins, took them to a cup final. So these are outsiders. They've tried different things. And it's kind of a new era of Flyers hockey. Alain Vigneault said that from day one of training camp before the season started. It's a new era. I think they've done a lot of things to make themselves competitive. And they're still really young. And that's what's exciting. They're still really young. The years are set up well for the future. But they're competitive. And, gosh, last year they had 82 points in a full 82-game season. This year they had 89. They played 13 fewer games.
Farzetta in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
9 o'clock hour brought to you by The Baxter. Dumpster in the bag at your estate, Home Depot, and Lowe's. For details, go to TheBaxter.com. You know, I was talking about the mood I was in throughout the weekend. Well, Saturday afternoon, Jamie, as I told you at the break, I was down the shore with friends of the family, right? And I just made for dinner, for all, lobster pizza.
Ooh.
Homemade lobster pizza, so good.
Obviously cheese, olive oil, garlic, and lobster?
A little more than that.
Oh, yeah?
A little more than that. A little heavy cream. In a frying pan, sauteed garlic. The whole thing. You know, I won't give away the secrets.
Right.
But nonetheless, we did that. It was nice. And I'm in a great mood. Made some cappuccinos for people, right? Sat down on the sofa, put on Sixers. Hated my life.
We're back, baby! The Sixers are back!
I was just like, hey, wow, how the turntables. All right.
Yeah.
From The Athletic, joining us right now, our good friend Rich Hoffman joining us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. Rich Hoffman, how are you, buddy?
I'm okay, guys.
Are you trying to talk us down already?
It's okay.
We can't see you, but blink if you're having issues. No, all right. How you doing there, Rich?
I'm all right. It was a tough watch the other night.
Here's the thing that jumped out of my mind. What the hell, man? Like, it was really bad. Like, it started out actually good. The play that I've referenced a couple of times this morning was the first play of the game. Shake Milton brings the ball up, passes to Ben at the elbow. He does a little, like, behind-the-back bounce pass to Joel Embiid, and I was like, oh, my God, did they run a play? Oh, my, this is amazing. And then defense completely broke down. Shake Milton looked terrible, and Joel Embiid, allegedly by Jamie Standards, threw a ball at Shake Milton's head. What did you see as the wheels were falling off the Sixers?
Yeah, just a really bad, kind of embarrassing performance altogether. I mean, the real reason they were in the game was because Indiana was so unbelievably small, and Embiid and Simmons in particular just killed them on the boards. They almost rebounded like 50% of their misses, but yeah, it was like you said, the defense was awful, and you know, this team, there's been a lot of high scores in the bubble in the Orlando, these seeding games so far. I have like news for this team. If they think they're going to win games in the 120s, like they're just not good enough offensively for that to happen. They need to like come into the game with a more focused defensive effort. It was, I mean, really strange performance from Ben Simmons, who's been really good defensively this year. He just got lit up by TJ Warren. It wasn't just him, but it was a lot of people. And then, you know, their offense, again, they were pretty good because they were just so much bigger than Indiana, but they had 21 turnovers. I thought their guards, just in terms of like doing point guard things, dribbling the ball, getting them into their offense, they were about as bad as you can get in the NBA. So I really, honestly, not a lot of positives outside of Joel Embiid from that game.
Yeah, you had the numbers on TJ Warren and Ben Simmons as his defender last night, and I saw these per NBA.com, and then you put this out on your social media, on your Twitter, Rich underscore Hoffman, two ends. Per NBA.com, the matchup, TJ Warren was 9 for 10 from the field, 5 for 5 from 3 on Ben Simmons. That's not the defensive stalwart that we were all looking forward to seeing upon the return.
No, and it's funny. If you look at the matchup stats, and I'm happy they still have them in Orlando, I guess that's the wonder of technology. But it's like throughout the season, I've seen a few times where it's like Pascal Siakam gives the Sixers 28 points. But if you look at what he had done against Ben Simmons, he was really inefficient. He really had to find other players to attack. So this was, I mean, this was like the bizarro world. I mean, it was insane. And, you know, TJ Warren, pretty good player, has hurt the Sixers this season. Nice score, smooth, like bucket getter. If he is the other team's best option, you should not be getting lit up. And I just thought Simmons was, it was really weird. I mean, he just did a terrible job, for the most part, chasing him around screen, something he's usually pretty good at. But, you know, you saw in the first quarter, it was like the second play of the game, they ran a pin down screen for TJ Warren, and they didn't even get a bucket on this, but I was just rewatching the game. He left Ben Simmons in the dust, and I was thinking, like, that's weird. And then you just watch the game over and over again, and it just continued to happen. Just poor off-ball instincts from Simmons, and it was a weird one. I will say, like, as far as all of the concerns that I laid out in that first answer, moving forward, I'm still the least worried about Ben Simmons' defense. After everything we saw this season, I refuse to believe something like that will happen again. That does not make it any less frustrating for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Rich, I'm with you. I read your piece last night on The Athletic, and I felt like I wrote it because it was exactly how I felt. I don't even care. Look, the Ben Simmons' poor defensive performance is more an anomaly to me. I can look past that. But what I can't look past is TJ Warren having 29 points at halftime, and there appeared to be no real defensive team adjustment to him. Like, they continued to give him space. They continued to not fight over top of screens. They just continued to let him have his shots. Where was Matisse Thybulle in kind of that role? Because you would think he was molded to be that guy to come out there to bring some energy to fight through screens and to lock somebody up. Where was the adjustments from Brett Brown?
Yeah, you know, I think you could argue that Matisse should have played more. I think Korkmaz got the first crack at the wing minutes, and he was, I mean, there was a lot of bad stuff about the game. He looked completely unplayable. He got attacked defensively, bricking open threes, and that's kind of the story with him. I'm sure he'll have a game where he lights it up in a few games, but, you know, the consistency is just not there. I did wonder in, like, rewatching the game, if they maybe could have doubled off Warren more. I will say, like, that is a little bit of an act of desperation. Unless TJ McConnell was playing, Indiana had a lot of really good shooters out there, so I'm not sure if doubling would have worked. And honestly, the point is, if you have Ben Simmons, you should not have to double. It's tough. I think in general, though, Jamie, like, they should have done something. Like, and if that's just having Ben Simmons play up on TJ Warren to make him put the ball in the floor and, you know, take your chances with him driving into Joel Embiid. And you really didn't see those adjustments. And it was discouraging. And, like, again, it's like I was saying earlier, if these guys think that they're going to play, like, pretty basketball games and, you know, in the 120s and 115s, they have no shot. They will be gone after the first round. They need to be an elite defense. And just like we've seen throughout the season, you know, the one that was put on hiatus 4 months ago, there's way too many times where they're just not following the scouting report or playing with the grit and toughness that you need on the defensive end and that they have the ability to, and it's frustrating.
At what point does Brett make another adjustment? Look, it's one game in, but this is such a rare case where you had, like you just mentioned, you referenced the 4 months, to break down and say, you know what? I know what this team needs. I need to move my all-star point guard to the power forward position and have Shake Milton run my offense for as much as he's going to run as a point guard. For that to fail, it could not have gone worse for Brett to make this decision to entrust Shake Milton to not only move your point guard, but also piss off your best player, your MVP candidate in Joel Embiid?
Yeah, I think the way you put it, Mark, it could not have gone any worse in that first game. And I think, to be fair to Milton, I would hope the moment didn't get too big for him, because it's just a seeding game in the NBA. Like, he played on national TV against the Clippers and the Lakers and was awesome. Like, I feel like that's a bigger game than what we saw the other night, even though it was the first game back. But what discouraged me the most about his performance, and there was a lot. The simple act of him bringing up the ball is tough. Like, he's somebody who other teams will try to harass, and you saw T.J. McConnell do that successfully. But what really bothered me from that game, and just felt like a completely different person than I've been watching for the last, well, I guess, you know, whenever he started to get into the rotation, is that he completely got rattled. It was, you know, he's this stoic figure who's never gets too high, never gets too low. The moment never gets too big for him. He was shook, and you could see it in his face. I mean, he's arguing with Embiid about pick and roll defense while T.J. McConnell is 1 foot in front of him, and he takes the ball from him. And that is, like, that's embarrassing. That's really bad. And then, you know, he's out of control on the next possession. He had a sequence where he lets Jakar Sampson score and T.J. McConnell get in the lane. He gives up the ball to T.J. McConnell because he's arguing with Embiid, and T.J. Warren hits a three. That one was not on Simmons, for sure. And then he charges into Warren on the other end because McConnell speeds him up. That's about as rough of a sequence as you'll see. I am very interested to see how they respond tonight. Like, I think as bad as that game was, I thought some of the stuff with Simmons at the elbow, kind of that first play you referenced, Mark, and getting Embiid involved, it looked good when they got the ball there. But because Milton and Richardson and, I mean, those are the main two guys that I'm thinking of, just were so poor in getting them into their offense, I think you have to wonder if they're going to have to change it at some point. But no, I don't think they're going to change it just yet. I think you do need to stick with it for a little bit.
I don't think so either, because if you're Brett, then that's a huge admission that you just spend that amount of time saying, oh, you know what, we need Shake Milton. There we go. That's the ticket. But the other thing that I think they need to do is, if this does continue to fail, if this one game is actually the hint at the trend and not just an anomaly, what is the backup plan? I mean, other than the obvious, I think, is Ben goes back to one, but then it's, do you have Matisse Thybulle in the starting five? Because we know the Al Horford experiment didn't work. So what is the, in case of emergency, break glass move?
I would think it's that. I would say it's probably put Ben as the point guard and put a 3-and-D type, and I would think Matisse, Korkmaz, I know that's not really the D part of the equation on that, but or maybe even Glenn Robinson III when he's healthy. And it's, you know, in classic Sixers fashion, the guy who doesn't play helps himself. But nice. It's like, yeah, so I think that would be the backup plan. But I wasn't too discouraged by the idea of Ben at the elbow. I thought, honestly, late in the game, he was catching and attacking, and it was exciting. Now, obviously, he was way bigger than the Pacers, but I would hope that they have the fortitude to stick this out a little bit and just hope that they get better play from pretty much every guard they had, because that was, you know, I guess the one positive is that they lost by 6 points, and I mean, I thought every guard that played was like a D-minus or an F.
Yeah, so that brings me to my next question, Rich. Watching this team right now, Josh Richardson, he has my brain in a pretzel. Because when he went out earlier in the year, the team noticeably struggled without him. And I was going, all right, maybe he's one of these below-the-radar, like, glue guys that kind of holds everything together. Now when I watch him offensively, like, defense, he gives you decent effort. I don't think he's a great defender, per se. Offensively, he looks lost to me. They had, you know, I believe 2 3-point attempts from their backcourt all night on Saturday. Yeah. Is Josh Richardson best suited for the starting five right now? Is he lost? Can they salvage this? Like, what are you seeing from Josh Richardson in this offense?
He's a tricky one because, you know, he did put up like 16 points a game in Miami last season. Uh-huh. But if you looked at the Miami offense, it wasn't very good. And he had a ton of consistent responsibility. And that's not something that he has here. It's,
it's been a weird, I think he's struggled to find consistency. Like, he's had some really standout performances where I'm thinking back to the Clippers home game. I think he scored 17 points in the fourth quarter of that game, like a really competitive, good game. He's awesome down the stretch. Had a huge game against Miami earlier this year. But yeah, to find the consistency is hard. And I agree with you. Like, he was completely lost. I just thought his decision making is bad. The one thing I will say that I think they need to not do is that he is not a point guard. Like, he just does not have those instincts to get everybody involved and be just kind of efficient with the basketball. But it's tough for him because they don't run any plays for him. They run plays for Embiid. They run plays for Simmons. They run plays for Tobias Harris. He's involved in a lot of them, but he's, like, getting them the ball. And I think Brett said it yesterday, like, maybe I do need to call a few more plays for him. But, yeah, for him to score, what, 4 points the other night and just look completely lost, that is something that I am kind of secretly worried about, too. He needs to be more aggressive shooting threes. You're going to need to see better from him. And hopefully that was a little bit of an aberration, but he's somebody who's had a little bit of a tough year with that and the injuries.
Rich, we really appreciate you coming on, man. So you think same starting five tonight? Do you think they get a win tonight against the Spurs?
I don't know, Mark.
I was just hoping for some semblance of optimism. No, Rich, good talking to you as always, man. Check his stuff out on theathletic.com. Great talking to you, bud.
Yes.
All right, see you, Rich Alvin.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.